Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Sentimental Garbage, the podcast where we talk about the culture we love that society sometimes makes us feel ashamed of. My name is Caroline and I've got a pretty sizable arse there, huge thighs. And she's still recovering from that scene in Bridget Jones' Diary, it's Hannah Flint.
Oh, I do have a sizable arse and I'm very happy about it. As Beyonce says, it's thick.
So. As much as that line makes me feel sad for humanity, the line delivery is so good.
Yeah.
It's the pause and then... huge thighs.
Yeah, it's like I like the idea that she did several versions of it, the actress. And I don't know her name, but she was in Teachers as well.
Yes, she's in everything.
She's in like always. And where's she gone now? I miss her. But yeah, it was just like, I love the idea. Like, okay, let's do it this way. Let's do it that way. It's like, wow. Because she doesn't have that many lines, but it's that one that just like seared onto your brain.
Yeah, that's how you know it's like, that's a real actor's actor. It's like that character in Love Actually is just like, she's an aide, she's in the background, but then... huge thighs,
yeah.
Just like round and round in my head.
But it's also kind of, it's something that we say in the privacy. I mean, not, I don't think you would get away with saying stuff like that online, but you know, we talk as girls, women, we have the kind of conversations have, we like maybe like dissect someone's body. Mm. And it felt like, oh, as much as that's an awful thing to say about Martine McCutcheon, mm-hmm. it, or the character. It's like, I feel like that we were kind of conditioned to think that was okay. Like, it's okay to like say, oh yeah, tiny tits, like big ass, look at the lines.
There's like an emotional honesty to the scene that's horrible yet true, which is why it's funny and why you react to it every time you see it, that in this like incredibly saccharine film, Love Actually, basically the most saccharine film you could really think of, which is... absolutely loaded with fat phobia also, like that sister in the Portuguese kind of plot line, it makes me very uncomfortable.
I realise I was saying Bridget Jones there, I've got it in my head, but it is Love Actually.
It's all of the Richard Curtis vibes.
Yeah. I feel like it's the kind of, because it's again, it's the Hugh Grant
The
connection of like Bridget Jones. Oh yeah. And I'm thinking about, I mean, it's like, I thought she said she was thin and I was like, oh
yeah.
Oh my God, that's insane. Because obviously Renee Zellweger is like anything but fat. Or like big. But yeah, like Love Actually, it's so interesting, Love Actually, as a film, because again, I actually still really enjoy watching it. And for me, I mean, you know, it sticks out in my mind, like the Joni Mitchell scene with
Emma Thompson. Absolutely, yeah.
Like that, I mean, Joni Mitchell, like the first tattoo I ever got was like a Joni Mitchell lyric from that, from Blue Album, which, and I just feel there's so many great moments of it, but it's also like, let's reassess.
So, To get on that reassessment, this episode today is a little different to what we usually approach things on the podcast. So, as I said in the intro, it's where we talk about culture we love that society makes us feel ashamed of, reclaiming sort of chick lit and all sort of female culture, quote unquote. But today we're kind of talking about the culture we love that doesn't necessarily love us back all the time. And we're particularly honing in on a chapter that you wrote in your book, Strong Female Character, that sort of fat, not just fat phobia, but sort of weight representation, eating disorder representation that are smuggled into the culture that we love and trust and how we deal with that, you know? Mm. And I think it's a reckoning as well, because we're at this weird crossroads of how we talk about fatness and weight and dieting, where there's such an enormous amount of media literacy. And I think of podcasts like Maintenance Phase that are like about debunking diets and talking, you know, that fat can be healthy and fatness is healthy. You know what I mean? It's like it's not necessarily, and recognizing that we've talked about fatness and it being a sort of a moral indicator in film and TV for years and debunking that, but we're also living in this reigning era of like Ozempic and films like The Whale that are just feel like, but they're still depicting weight as being this grotesque thing. And I guess I just want to check in with you about it all.
It's so interesting. The Whale, I spoke to Darren Aronofsky for my film review podcast, Fade to Black. And I had this really interesting, I don't know, I both found it to be quite profound mm-hmm. in a way, but also felt that there's certain, the way they did things was quite dehumanizing. And I actually kind of, I put that to Darren. I was like, because there's a, in the whale, from the moment he eats, it's the sound effects. It's the, like, every bite of chicken, it's like gross. And mm-hmm. it's like seen as this, like, and I get what they're trying to do. They're trying to say this guy's eating himself to death because of his cycle, like mental health issues. And I think the biggest thing I connect with as someone who had, I don't think you ever get rid of an eating disorder, but someone who has bulimia and did the purge binge cycle, especially when I was younger, like, it grapples with how you're trying to fill that hole. And I think the whale, in a way, does is successful in the sense of what we do to ourselves because we're trying to fill that hole of pain inside. Mm. But, of course, I don't think that every time he eats, it should be seen as like a horror movie, because we have to eat. And I think that's a difficult thing about eating disorders mm. is that it's not like smoking. You can, you know, give it up, or alcohol. You can give it up. You have to eat. So every time you sit down for a meal, it becomes a kind of trigger or a test. And so with the whale, I do think it's interesting that we kind of get into that eating disorder dynamics, that kind of how the psychological effect, especially with someone who is bigger, who is like a man as mm-hmm. well. Because mm-hmm. again, most of the stuff, certainly, and you know, like, the difficulty writing a book about film is that you're like, there are so many films, I couldn't possibly...
There are simply so many.
It's just... Maybe it's counterproductive for me to say maybe too many films. Like, give me a break. Let me get off my neck. Like, please. I see so many movies a week. And it's like, I went away last week and I was like, I'm going to read. And I read 5 books. I was like, yes. And now I don't have to read any more for the rest of the year. It's like, I'm done. But you know, most of the stuff, I'm 35. I just turned 35. So, you know, most of the stuff that we watch, and it wasn't even films that even have to have anything to do with like eating disorders or even mention it. But we saw a very specific standard of like white, skinny women. And then, you know, we'll go back to Love Actually. The mentalness of that film is that Martine McCutcheon, who is probably what, like a size 10, 12 mm-hmm. in that film, she's presented as this like fat person, as mm-hmm. if, and it's that, and it's weird because you get into this, you know, I mentioned the book like Super Size versus Super Skinny, which I was obsessed with watching. Like, you know, they're all those kind of like 10 years younger. Those, again, we look back and I was like, ooh, maybe we shouldn't have watched this.
Yeah.
But the extremities, like we kind of, the middle bit where actually most people exist with their kind of troubled eating as well. Like, and again, each of us have our different sizes. We've got different, you know, you could be an endomorph, an ectomorph, a mesomorph. Like, sorry, bring a bit.
What are those words?
So these are the things I remember from my GCSE PE. But basically, it's like your body type. So there's kind of, if you look at a kind of like a triangle, the ectomorphs would be the slimmer frames. People are just like naturally slimmer. Mm-hmm. You'd have mesomorph who are kind of more muscular, and then you'd have endomorph who are kind of bigger. And so we kind of all fit on like a like in between, right. Like in some. Of
I've
that.
Never heard this. This.
Well, there you go. That's the only thing I remember from GCSE PE, I think. And you know, I used to play basketball for like National League for England. So sport was a very much part of my lifestyle. And then when I went to university, you know, suddenly you have to eat, cook for yourself. Like, you're in control of your diet. Mm. And then, you know, everyone gets the gains that, like, I feel like everyone's like, in America, they say the freshman 15.
Right.
But, like, you know, you kind of change. You're drinking a lot. And suddenly, when at the same time, you're reading Heat magazine, you're reading, you know, everything that's saying to you, like, circling around marks on your body. It's like, oh, my God, I can't believe that we, like, took all that in. And at the same time, watching films that say, this is what you're supposed to look like. And, you know, trying to achieve that sort of like ridiculous standard. It's a really interesting thing, because sometimes I'm very aware that, like, certainly for me, even at, when I had my eating disorder, when it first really developed, when I was doing my master's, you know, I'm like, I think I'm about like 10 stone now. And again, I don't really weigh myself anymore. I've got past that point. Mm-hmm. And, but I was 11 stone when I left uni, and I'm sorry if it's like triggering to talk about stones on this, but I gained like three stone, and it wasn't like I was like massively big or anything like that, but I did feel really uncomfortable in my body, and that was because I kept on, I mean, it's annoying. You kind of feel like, if I've got an eating disorder, I should at least lose some weight, but no, I gained it. And it's that thing we don't see. I can identify myself as having bulimia because I don't, what does bulimia even look like? Mm. You know, that's anorexia. We all know, like, she looks anorexic. We know it's skinny. So like, when you're not having that kind of conversation represented. And this is why it's the beauty of cinema, is that it can represent so many different walks of life, ways of life and living. But, you know, I didn't have the kind of visual language or even like, you know, written language or anything going on about what bulimia was. So it's very difficult to me to understand it. And I suppose, you know, can some people say, oh, you look great. And it's like, oh, you look fine. It's like, I don't feel fine in my body because I know the only reason I've gained this weight is in an unhealthy way. I'm literally going to reduce section, buying so many cakes, like all the basics, like Sainsbury's basics, chocolate cookies and biscuits. And I'm trying to fill that hole. So I think, yeah, there is a very specific thing, and again, go back to supersized versus skinny. That's like, that's what we said. That's what overweight is. This is what super skinny is. Mm-hmm. When you're in the middle bit, it's really hard to navigate your own like unique individual perspective of like how you want your body to feel and look and just be okay with it.
This is something I might edit out later, but I actually, someone very close to me was on supersized versus super skinny.
Wow.
And he was on season one, and he was, this is what I can't get over. His therapist recommended him for the show.
Wow.
Because he didn't have any more money for therapy. And he went, the therapist was like, well, you know, what might be a good...
yeah.
Represent, you know, a good sort of way for you to get therapy is to be on this show. And he was sort of like, look, boys can get it too, kind of thing. Which sort of brings me back to this kind of thing of like, we have such a specific idea that is prompted by the culture of what and who gets an eating disorder.
Yeah.
And I think, and it's almost always pictured as being a young white woman illness. And I think what's so interesting
middle
about
class
that.
Middle class, and like slightly wealthy. Like, you know, one of the stats I put in the book is about how Beats said a lot of people assume that you have to have, you're affluent, like you can afford to not eat anything or whatever. And actually a lot of people in low income, you know, like, you know, quote unquote working class people, people of different, you know, ethnic backgrounds, like, you know, again, and it's all there, but we just make this assumption. And as you said, it's what we see on screen.
It's what we see on screen. And I think what that does is it's like, it's sort of, it, you know how like, how a band or a pop star or any kind, the Beatles or whatever, the minute they lose credibility is the minute they have teenage fans.
Yeah.
I think that's what we do with eating disorders as well. It's like we, by depicting it as a thing that young white middle class or upper middle class women suffer from, it's like, this is a disease that you get when you have no real problems and you're just sort of like taking it out on yourself because you feel a bit sad and maybe the magazines are being a bit cruel, kind of thing, as opposed to this thing that affects many different people at many different levels and absolutely everywhere, you know?
And we divorce, people think that people who have eating disorders, it's just because they want to look slim and stuff. We divorce the mental health aspect of it. It's like there's a reason why someone doesn't want to eat, and it's most sometimes there's something totally different that's guiding it. For me, you know, I was dealing with a bit probably depression and anxiety that I never really dealt with. I was doing my masters at the point. I'd like hooked up with the love of my life, ex, who broke up with me a year before, and then he ghosted me. And I was in this flat on my own, and I remember it so vividly. I remember coming, like, it was during the Christmas time. It was like a big break doing my, I did my master's at broadcast journalism at City University London, and just watching like Grey's Anatomy and just going shopping in my bed and eat, like just eating. And I just, it's that trying to fill a hole. And I realized like that was my crux. That's what I was using. I was emotionally eating. And it's because I had this other sadness. Other people could have it because they, you know, anorexia or something. It's like a sense of control. Like I can't control any other aspects of my life and it seems too much. So I can control this. And I feel like that's another thing because everyone kind of looks it up. It's like, oh, people just want to be skinny or they, you know, whatever. And it's like, no, that's actually not the reason, because again, being skinny is not the only way you can have an eating disorder. You can be plus size, you can be any size and having an eating disorder.
Yeah, and it's I'm reminded of something that I think it was Caitlin Moran wrote, where she said that you know, overeating or disordered eating is often a carer's addiction kind of thing, because you can binge and still get your children up in the morning for school and dress them and wash them. If you're an alcoholic, you can't necessarily do that, or a drug addict, you can't necessarily do that. So it's like something that you're using to fill the hole that you could also perform other parts of your life.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. I mean, you know, that's just reminded me when I when I graduate from my master's, I was working at like a marketing agency during the week. And then on weekends, I managed to get like some work experience at LBC Radio. Mm. So I was working like Saturday and Sunday early morning, guest booking, and then Monday to Friday. So it was a very intense period. So I was so busy and I could secret eat. Like I remember because LBC is part of Global. And I remember they used to have these like massive boxes of like Dairy Milk chocolate that was just there. And I would just keep eating them. I just like have five in a day. And it's mad because even at this time I was signed up for gym box next door. You know, I did a half marathon. So you can do all these things at the same time, but still when it comes to like that, I just needed that as the relief. It was like a weird relief. And then the shame comes through and the guilt comes through and that's when you purge. And then I remember, you know, there was talking about like fad diets. I mean, I remember there was this thing called, I think it's the Cambridge diet. So I went to see someone each week and they would give me these sachets or something you're supposed to have. It was like oat milk or it was oatmeal or a milkshake or like soup. Mm. And I was trying to do that way with someone. And it just, you know, it didn't work because I still buy and I'm paying whatever it was a week. It was only until, and I suppose probably because of as a junior athlete, like I met a personal trainer. And, you know, having that coach back and someone in over a year, I managed to get just down and my disordered eating just kind of leveled out, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And I stopped using that. And yeah, and it's, you know, again, I don't think I have seen that journey on screen at all. And it was something I had to kind of come to on my own because also I was kind of ashamed to tell any of my friends or my parents or, you know, you get you just need to eat three meals a day. It's like, I know how to eat. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not the issue about not being able to eat. So but now, you know, you mentioned the whale, like there's that to the bone, which was the, Marty Knox, who it's, she used to direct, she wrote on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Marty Noxon, that's it.
Okay.
She wrote on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and then Lily Collins, Phil Collins' daughter, she played the lead character in. And there's a lot of conversation as well about her doing, and she lost a lot of weight for that role. Mm. And I think it's interesting, just even getting into the... Sorry, I've kind of moved on of like my stream of consciousness has gone into that bit. Okay. But with that one, we had, you know, a character called Kendra, who is a plus-size black woman who, you know, she uses enemas, she uses laxatives to... as part of her eating disorder, but she wasn't there because she's going to die. A lot of the time, you know, when we see eating disorders, it's like skinny, it's like they're on the verge of death. Like, they're going to die. Mm-hmm. Drop Dead Gorgeous, like, perfectly showed that in the best satirical way.
And I think, oh my God, let's get back to Drop Dead Gorgeous in a second because I think it's such a brilliant representation. But it's like, I think we are, in our depictions of how we do eating disorders, you're right, it is always like some, like, bone-thin, generally white woman who... Mm. What's so difficult to pull apart here is that we have this culture that is obsessed with thinness and will show us, you know, a 15-year-old model wearing Levi's jeans and she's like pick thin or whatever. Mm. And we're told this is normal womanhood. This is like, it's what people look like. Yeah. It's kind of a fantasy, but this is what people, and like that's everywhere. That's like literally our base level of existence in the world, like getting on the London tube is like that. And so we've nurtured an entire sort of society to believe that this is both normal, regular and desirable. And then we depict women who are roughly the same weight or BMI or whatever in these shows, and like the camera is just naturally programmed to caress their thinness. Do you know what I mean? Because, and that's how the camera has trained us to look at their thinness. So it's like, she might be sort of like holding a sort of shawl around her and shivering, and she's Lily Collins and whatever. And it's like, it's so hard to represent any kind of disordered eating in a way that is responsible because of the way we're already programmed to look at thin women.
Yeah.
And I don't know how we get around that except for the Drop Dead Gorgeous example.
Yeah, exactly.
So talk us through that bit. That film and that particular character and scene.
Drop Dead Gorgeous. I mean, just like absolutely iconic. Written by a woman, Lona Williams. I feel like, I mean, it's so interesting. That was one of those films where, it's got a cult following since. Mm-hmm. Like, even though it was so great, same for the Heathers. No one liked Heathers when it came out. It's got a cult following since. I mean, it's madness to me that people didn't just love it at the time. But with Mary Johansson, so she's the pageant winner from the previous year. And so first time we see her, she's like this emaciated figure in a hospital bed. And of course, this is, you know, if you haven't seen Drop Dead Gorgeous, it's like a mockumentary style, style shooting, you know, think like The Office. But Kirsten Dunst plays like a wannabe pageant winner. There's lots of contestants. You know, some of the first roles for like Amy Adams was in it.
And
as
Brittany
well.
Murphy is in it. She's fabulous in it.
She was, I still feel there's a question about like her death. And I'm still, maybe I'm a bit too conspiracy theory about
I
it.
I feel like we're going to get more info. Yeah.
I need like a docuseries on Brittany Murphy. That's what I need. But then, yeah, Kirstie Alley plays like the Denise Richards' mom, who's like the former pageant winner. She's like super conservative. Yeah. It just gets into all these things. And you have Ellen Barkin and Alison Janney playing best friends, which is perfect.
But it's a perfect film.
It's just,
I've almost covered it on the podcast several times, but I feel like I don't even bother because it's like, it's perfect. And no, and there's nobody out there who doesn't think it's perfect. If you've seen it, you think it's pretty great.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, there is like some pretty challenging stuff about like people with disabilities, but like, so which I wouldn't recommend or love, but other than that, like, it's just, it's such a perfect satire of female culture, I feel, and what women do to one another, not even at the behest of any kind of male gaze. It's more like each other's gaze, and it's very women looking at women, women judging women, and it's like the entire,
it gets into class as well. That's what's really interesting about it. It's like pre-tier, what's it called that TV show, Tiaras and what was it?
Toddlers and Tiaras.
And it's like before that. And it's like that kind of preempted that sort of culture. And you see that series is like madness. People come away, it's like they're kind of, you know, lost in it. It's like, this is so trashy but good. And it like really captures that the characters are like Midwestern. Like,
I think beauty pageants in general, even though like most of us, like they're such a specific thing. They're such a like a American, typically the South type of obsession. But I think they serve as such an amazing allegory for what it is to be female in the world that we all are kind of aware and are obsessed with them a bit. You know, like we all, I think they considering how they're not a thing in our lives, assuming they were never a thing in your life, they were never a thing in my life, they take up a lot of real estate in my brain. And the kind of framing of this whole film is like, it's the sort of this tiny, shitty little farm town or whatever. The only way you can get out of this town as like a working class girl, if you're Kirsten Dunst, is to sort of win a scholarship.
Yeah, she's a trailer park. She lives on the
trailer
park.
She's a trailer park kid. And like, but also there's so much sort of credibility in it. And it's typically won by this family. And it's kind of like a, it's like a, and then there were none but for beauty pageants. Like they all get picked off one by one.
It's just so
fabulous.
It's so interesting. Also, like, you've just, it's kind of the modern day version of like having an accomplished woman, right? So you think about like Pride and Prejudice and stuff. It's like, or any of those period romps where a young lady is a debutante.
Plays the pianoforte.
Yes. And she reads and, you know, she's accomplished in so many ways. And I think, you know, you think about beauty pageants. I wrote a piece about for BBC Culture when the Misbehaviour came out and looked at the kind of like whether it's can be feminist or not, because I think now they're really trying to push the feminist angle. But like the whole point of now to be like a beauty pageant like winner or a contestant, you have to be accomplished. You've not only got to look absolutely banging, still look good in a swimsuit, like come on, but you also have to like want world peace and you have to do all these things. You have to have like a master's degree and all these women go into it and it's like they are accomplished, but that's like this woman have to be everything, and that's so much pressure as well. It's like you have to be that perfect person. But yeah, like, so Drop Dead Gorgeous, what I love about it is that, you know, it doesn't, again, it's honest, it's truthful, and it, and you know, we the eating disorder element of it, they don't show it. It's like, for like, this looks awful. Like, she, they don't make her look good. She literally cannot move, and she's like this, like, it's Alexandra Holden, the actress, and she's just got this like very like
dreamy.
She feels dreamy in her own world. And even the bit at the end where she's kind of, the previous winner has to come and do their routine again.
Yeah. So importantly, the thing they're all fighting for, this woman has already won the year before, and we barely see her, and then it's like, oh well, she's in hospital, and we're like, what kind of thing is that? It's like this kind of record scratch moment of like, the thing that people are living and dying for is like, this woman is literally dying of it, you know, like it's such a great sort of record scratch.
And I think that's what's like, you're showing something that they're teasing, they're using it in a satirical way to show this is not aspirational. Because I think that's what it is. Beauty pageants, they're aspirational, right? You want to look like that magazine. And I think it's really interesting when you get into looking at representation of characters on screen, but also the actresses who play them, like in the wider culture as well. Because, you know, that is the celebrity culture, celebrity bodies, you know, that's all an extension of it. And we're so obsessed with female bodies, like, you know, going to like Laura Mulvey, talking about the female gaze, kind of. Although I think, you know, nowadays you wouldn't, the male gaze is like, I don't know. I don't know if you can gender gaze really at this point, because you get into the intersectionality of people. Like, would it be male gaze if a lesbian filmmaker shot? Is that male gaze? It could also be, you know, and that's like a whole other subject we can get into. But you're kind of chopped apart. Like, in every time you see an image, whether it's on a moving image or a still image in a magazine, it's like women's bodies are there to be kind of dissected. Sometimes, you know, you don't even, you know, I always think it's interesting when they do bodies and they do, you know, the slow pan up the leg. It's like they divorce, they take away the person's head. There's a whole thing, like advertisement, like about that sort of subordination where we dehumanize women by actually only showing them as, you know, as a collection of body parts for that people can desire, right?
Yeah. But even like if you, I mean, magazines are sort of like vanishingly relevant now where it's, but like, I always think that like, if you look at a magazine stand and like, if you're seeing like, it's Emma Stone or something, Hayek or Ava Green or whoever, it's like them in the long and the wide. Do you know what I mean? You see every single part of the body. You see where the clothes cling to the body, and you look at the cover of Men's Health or GQ, and it's like smash cut of Chris Evans. There's lots of lines in his face. It's black and white. Yeah. He's smiling. He likes his life. Salt and pepper hair. It's always about like how, look, this is a guy, man. Yeah. You love the guy up close with the guy.
Yeah,
you know?
Like super rugged. But I would actually say nowadays, men's bodies have gone for a change, especially when we think about superheroes. Like the superhero bod has become the new standard for actors. Like, you know, I'm, I love superhero films, and it's, you know, I've heard stories about what actors do, the steroids that they take to get that level of like henchness, butchness, you know. And now you have like, look at people who are like, Chris Pratt, perfect example of someone who, when he was in Parks and Recreation, was like, you know, kind of, you know, normal guy, heavy set, whatever. Then he does his Men's Health cover because now he's playing Star-Lord and it's like, let's do the rips out. And that creates a standard even for men. So you've got to be like that. Kumail Nanjiani, when he did Eternals.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, that he did a Men's Health cover. So actually now it's become, whereas women, I don't know, it's interesting. I feel like, you know, and I don't want to just put it on like the Kardashian thing, but like it goes in like ebbs and flows, circular, isn't it? So once, you know, now it's curves are kind of in, and now you're supposed to have a bum and boobs. And you know, I think of people like, you know, like Christina Hendricks, who's like gorgeous, or Billy.
Okay, so I have a thing about Christina Hendricks that has been on my mind for a long time. And I've brought it up on this pod before because I think I talk about fashion being sort of Joan-pilled in the 07s. But this thing of like, I remember when Christina Hendricks happened, and like that stills of her in Mad Men were everywhere. Like it was like, oh, the curvy shape, but we love it, yum yum. But then it would always be like Christina Hendricks on a red carpet at like the Emmys or whatever. It would be the first person. She'd be the first person on the like, ew, no list. What not to wear?
Yeah.
Like, I remember Joan Rivers, when I used to watch Joan Rivers.
Wow, yeah.
I remember her saying, oh, they look like two bald toddlers headbutting each other about her tits. And I thought it's so fascinating how like Mad Men could dress sort of.
You had to dress that then.
Exactly. Joan was desirable because Joan is in the 1960s and Joan is in the time of Marilyn Monroe or whatever. But Christina, ew, no.
No.
Like, and I find that such a weird.
You know what I really like as well, even just like her body, is again allowing women to have like wider stomach coming out. Do you know what I mean? That's realistic. I think about like Rihanna, where she obviously has gained weight, and she's like, you can't have the butt without the punch or whatever. That's what she kind of says. It's like, that's realistic. You know, one of the things, I mean, Eat, Pray, Love, whether you like that movie or not.
I like parts of it.
I like parts of it. But there's a line in it, I and that's like seared into my brain. I mentioned it in an early part of the book, but there's a bit where she's doing the eating bit. Right. She's in Italy and she's like, oh, I can't do my jeans up, blah, blah, blah. I mean, she gets big in the way that only like acceptable Hollywood bigness. Like she can't be too like she can't be like actual, because of course we can't have anyone actually getting fat in a film. But there's a bit in it where like her friend says to her, it's like, oh, God, I've got so big, I can't close. You know, I feel horrible. It's like I'm like muffin top or something. She's like, no one's ever going to kick you out of bed has anyone ever kicked you out of bed because of a muffin top? It's like, that's so true. Like, we put so much pressure on ourselves of thinking we have to look this very sleek, like washboard abs, like just have like your bones jutting out and stuff. But most of the time, like most men don't act like, or whatever, not just if you want men or women, like we don't, no one cares about that really that much. You know, of course there's people who want to have like the supermodel type, but I want to give men a little bit more credit when it comes to sex, that they're more interested in actually fucking you than worrying that you've got a little bit of thing hanging over, you know?
Yeah. At the same time though, it's like, I think what we're very much centering this conversation in like a mid-size thing, you know? Like,
yeah.
But there, I think life is still fucking hell if you're dating and you're a woman and you're, you know, fat or heavy or whatever, you know, like, I think it's an awful experience if you're a straight woman on those apps.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? I mean, look at films like, oh God, even, yeah, like, how often do you see a female lead who is, I mean, maybe like, what's the Danielle McDonald, she's an Australian actress and she was in this film called Patty Cakes, which I first saw. And she's a plus size woman and she's desirable to this other guy. And it's like, great. That's like a normal romantic relationship between not only like a woman who's plus size, but like, you know, a dark skinned black man who's, you know, that you don't really see that a lot. Or, you know, even not to say that she's, you know, massive, but Queen Latifah in like Just Right, where she's a chef, I think, in it. And she thinks she's going to die. Is that the one?
Oh, no, you're talking of The Last Holiday, which I low-key love.
But there's also Just Right, where she dates a basketball guy. But again, Queen Latifah, she's not the skinny standard. She's a black woman. She loves her body. Yeah. Like, I mean, I thought it was ridiculous once when I saw that. What was the name of Orlando Bloom's ex-wife is the model?
Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about.
I mean?
Beautiful woman, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
But I remember there was a thing where she'd like...
A couple of people are screaming at the podcast now what her name is.
I know, tell us now. Miranda, I want to say.
Oh, Miranda Kerr.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Miranda Kerr.
Lovely, love that we got here together.
Got there, yes. But there was a thing where she'd like, she had made her body slimmer on like sized herself down like a photo or something. There's all those Instagram accounts now that will show any type of edits being done. The culture of like the beauty industry and the standards and the things that go on now with Botox and, you know, we were talking about, you know, like Ozempic, this diabetes drug.
Yeah. So this Ozempic conversation has been going around for a while. But if no one's heard of it, can you give us a brief intro?
Well, this is from what I read from a Cut article. So I'm not an authority. But Ozempic is a drug that's used for people with diabetes. And it's now being used in America where it's an appetite suppressant. Right. And so there was a really interesting line in the Cut article, and I recommend reading it if I go to find it. But there was a woman, and it's not just kind of like actresses and stuff. There's people who work in PR, agents, like people in the periphery of the kind of like arts and culture kind of world, but beyond that as well. But it was like everyone who wasn't already thin in LA is now thin. That sort of thing. And then it's the buccal fat removal situation, which is wild to me.
The buccal?
Have you heard of this? Where like people are now getting, so you know we have, there's a big thing where it used to be like fillers and you used to have like, you know, you'd have a quite puffy face. It's supposed to make them youthful. Now people are getting their buccal fat, which is like cheek fat, removed.
Oh.
So now they have that slightly hollow so you can see your jawline a bit more.
Oh,
I think Chrissy Teigen said that she'd actually had it done. She admitted to having it done.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I can think of a few people who looks like that. Yeah, no, I have this this WhatsApp group that I'm part of that's other women in the media, and I feel like every other day we're like, guess who's on Ozempic now? And it's so strange because the conversation, and because these are connected ladies, you know, so like the conversation has filtered down from like, this Hollywood movie star is on Ozempic, how awful and sad, because it's terrible for your health and it's also terrible for the general beauty standard,
but also terrible for people with diabetes who can't get this drug anymore because they take it, so they're out of supply, and that's what's insane.
Totally. And but then it's like it's filtering down. Like I had some friends saying I met some like a media assistant at a party and she is on Ozempic.
Oh, wow.
You know, and it's like yeah. So it's this thing, it's like, wow, what starts with celebrities inevitably filters down. Like, it used to be really, really unusual for a normal person to get Botox, and now lots of people have it,
and
you know?
And this is the thing why it's really interesting to look as part of, you know, my book is about on-screen representation. It's also what's going on behind the scenes because, you know, one of the most famous diet pill users, Judy Garland, right? Mm-hmm. She was forced to have those when she was like a teenager to keep herself slim. You know, it's insane. And she obviously kind of like never truly recovered from that experience. You know, I write in the book, the big thing, I'm sure you probably remember the maple syrup diet when that was all the rage. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing it because Beyonce, when she was doing Dreamgirls, she had 2 weeks to do scenes where she's playing a 16-year-old, and she's basically going between 16-year-olds and 36 years old in the musical about kind of about Diana Ross and the Supremes, but it's not apparently. But I mean, she's called Dina, and it was interesting how she gets asked about it. She talked about it at Oprah, and then of course we're obsessed. This is what. Someone does it. I remember reading one article about like Cameron Diaz does the water diet.
Yeah,
it's like, what is that? Obsessive.
The maple syrup diet is literally, it's like maple syrup, lemon juice, and cayenne pepper, just in water, just like
shake it up, and that's it. And I came back, I remember, and she was talking about, of course, again, because we're so obsessed with women's bodies that even in media, that's the things we have to ask. And even though she literally says in the interview, she's like, I did this for a movie role. And again, you know, things that you can get into a whole thing about things people do for a movie role, where it's gaining weight, losing weight, and the media storm around. And it adds this sense of, you know, I wrote about method acting recently, and a lot of people confuse method acting with like losing weight for a role. As if that's method. That's, it's not actually. That's not what it is. That's just going to extreme. But there's anytime someone loses, like, you know, Christian Bale, Tom Hanks, you know, anytime these people lose weight, people are so interested in it. It creates more drama. And it's this idea of suffering for the role. And it means that, oh, this is a labor rather than just being playing make-believe.
Yeah. And I think as well, I think if a person has to get into a physical condition for their job, that's between them and their job kind of thing. But if that existed in a vacuum, that would be fine. I'd be like, oh, you know.
Yeah,
Beyonce needed to play a 16-year-old. It makes sense that she needed to be. I don't know. I guess whatever. But like these things don't happen in a vacuum. Yeah. They're then just like disseminated.
Yeah.
And what's weird is like it's like this, you know, those like fairy tales where like the witch, you know, does a thing for you, and it's like the Wizard of Oz. It's like, oh, you had it all along, kind of thing. What that maple syrup diet is, and other kinds of diet like that. It's like it actually has nothing to do with the maple syrup, the lemon juice, or the cayenne pepper. The eating disorder was within you all along. Yeah. Like it was about not eating calories. Do you know what I mean? It's like we found all these ways to jazz up. Not fucking eating. Yeah. Like I remember in the early noughties when I was a teenager, me and my sister and my mom doing the Special K drop a jean size.
Oh my God, that was like 2 weeks, drop a jean size in two weeks. Like that was normal.
And it was exciting. Like it was fun that we were all doing this thing together and no one really thought about it,
you
know?
Oh my God, it's just insane. And you know, I think about this, the Beyonce thing where she talks about it. And I suppose now I'm at the conclusion kind of, I think it would behoove a lot of these actors to not talk about it. Say I did an unhealthy diet, that's how Liz lost weight, I'm not going to tell you how to do it. Because the minute she told people what she did,
that's it.
Suddenly it gets reprinted everywhere. If you Google maple syrup diet, you can learn how to do it.
It's
right
a bit
now. And now we have online.
Yeah.
So it's not just you'd read it in a magazine and it's gone. Now you can literally find it everywhere.
Now we have online.
Yeah, now we have the online, this internet. I think it's going to catch on.
I have a friend, an old friend, who now works at the BBFC, and he told me one of the first things he had to do when he got the job was to review the age rating on The Craft, because there is a scene, a self-harm scene in that, and there's the reason it's an 18s, even though it's fairly inoffensive as a movie, is because there is details about it that could be represented as tips, essentially, like, here's how you quote unquote properly cut your wrists, kind of thing. And it makes me think that, like, do we need that around weight loss? And it makes me think that, like, is there any ethical way to show or talk about having an eating disorder that doesn't lay the groundwork of tips in young people's heads?
Yeah, it's really interesting because there is that idea, especially when it comes to cinema, it is so influential.
Because it's a visual art form, you know? Like, it's...
And I was listening to this thing, a podcast the other day about, like, Michel Foucault, and it was like his subject and power. And it's like how actually we don't really have an original thought. We're so conditioned by, mm-hmm. we're socialized, right? Mm-hmm. We're all, everything that we do is socialized by our parents, what we watch on screen, what we read and all that. So actually, even if subconsciously you might not think about it, you might watch a movie and think, I mean, look, again, as we're talking about, it's like rape culture, right? It's normalized mm-hmm. on screen by the vavishing or whatever. Like, we normalize what you're supposed to look like because of the way people looked at it on screen. We normalize that actually people's story that matter in society are white people because they're the most people who have been seen on screen. We normalize stereotypes and all that. You know, it's interesting, you know, going back to Heather, you know, and I think, again, just such a perfect film. And I actually, if you want to listen to me talking to Michael Lehman, it was his directorial debut, and I do a podcast series called First Film Club and do event series.
Oh, amazing.
It's like an hour and 20 minutes of me chatting to him about Michael Lehman. You can find it on like any podcast platforms. But like, just the way I love about, similar to Drop Dead Gorgeous, it's like there's a scene where they're in a bathroom, and then it's just such a little thing that you don't know notice unless you've actually done it yourself. Mm. But like, there's a bit where like Veronica's helping Heather Duke throw up, right? Mm. But we don't see her doing it, but we see her file her nail down. Veronica file her nail down, and that's such a little moment that's like, oh wow, we know what she's doing. That's kind of like she's, and again, I'm not going to get into it, but if you've ever been bulimic, you know what you do to kind of make yourself sick. That was like a little nod to it. And it's like, so you might not recognize that if you aren't aware of like what bulimia. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a way you can kind of, I don't know, like knowingly kind of touch on it and make it feel real. And of course, you know, Heather Chandler's like, grew up. Heather eating bulimia, so like 87, and I think that's just brilliant because it's like the issue isn't your eating disorder, it's just you're out of fashion, like mm-hmm. come on, you need to go on to whatever the hot way to like be an eating disorder. But you know, cinema, it's, you know, do you need to show a whole rape for it to feel like a rape scene, right? Mm. Or do you need to show someone actually puking up or whatever to show that that person's, because again, like you said, the tips and stuff, mm-hmm. but then there's also a level of, you know, there's not a trigger warning of life. Sometimes to better reflect it, sometimes you have to show it. It's just like, I suppose the way which is showing, maybe it's just a case of like, you know, trigger warnings before it, like this has depictions of stuff. I think sometimes, especially when it's younger people as well, I think parents should be, you know, there is the BBFC are doing, you know, they do their job, and there's been an interesting thing about like how actually when it comes to female sexual pleasure, that gets a higher rating than male sexual pleasure, mm-hmm. which is wild to me. And I think they're getting better on that. Mm. But
wait, what?
Like, yeah, there's like in historically, like say something like, and there's But I'm a Cheerleader mm-hmm. got like a higher rating than American Pie because it had like lesbian sex scene. And it was because of the, you know, that's the whatever the American equivalent of the BBFC is. But mm-hmm. sometimes when it comes to if a woman's getting oral sex or if a woman's having, you know, getting eaten out or something, that's considered that has been given a higher age rating. I think Evan Rachel Wood's talked about it before. It's like it gets bumped up to like an 18 or an N17.
God.
It's just insane, isn't it?
Yeah,
but again,
it's mad.
I think, sometimes again, when it comes to these films, especially when you're in a 12A territory where like it's a free for all, like, you never go to a movie and it's like you're watching like, I don't know, like a, like, you know, Doctor Strange and Multiverse of Madness and people got like 5-year-olds in it. It's like mm-hmm. 12A mm-hmm. is like use some like common sense, parents. You shouldn't be taking your kids into that. I do think we should be a bit more mindful if you're responsible for other people, younger people, being mindful of what you're showing them. Maybe have a conversations afterwards, right? Mm. One of the big things when I went to cinemas with my parents, why I love it, is that, you know, we go see a movie and we talk about it afterwards. So I don't know. There's no right answer or wrong answer. I think it's just like, how do we talk about it in a way where we're not kind of, I suppose, reinforcing it or trying to promote it as like, yes, do this.
Yeah. Like we spoke about this before the podcast, but this Jacqueline Wilson book mm. that I adored, I'm sure we should cover them on the podcast at some point. There was a series she did for slightly older teenagers called The Girls, sort of before Lena Dunham, there was Jacqueline Wilson. It was girls out late, girls under pressure, and girls in love.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. I think I've told it in the reverse order, but yes. And there was Girls in Tears, which came many years later. Mm.
I feel like you must, like, as someone who writes in the young adult space, like, you must keep abreast of all the kind of
I do.
Do you get to send the books? Because I would love to get sent.
I never get sent Jacqueline Wilson book. I would love to, but
I've just started volunteering.
They don't need me, I don't think.
She's now doing Enid Blyton, right? And she's redoing them. But I do this, I volunteer for Doorstep Library, where it's like a charity where we go into like local community and read with young kids once a week with different families. And there's these boxes that we pick. So we pick the books up and take them with them. And there's a load of Jacqueline Wilson's books that I haven't read because I was like a Jacqueline Wilson fan. But I'm like, can I steal them?
Being a Jacqueline Wilson fan is a bit like being a Simpsons fan in that like you and I both know we're talking about a certain era, like probably between like 1998 and 2007 or something. But actually there's been about 30 Jacqueline Wilson books since then that we have no idea what she's talking about now. Back then she was obsessed with like the care system and like issues and single moms or whatever. There will be a Jacqueline Wilson episode someday, I promise you listeners. But there this book, Girls Under Pressure, which the lead character Ellie of this series, who's kind of I think she's sort of a size sort of 14 is kind of how she's depicted. And she's got two very thin mates and they all kind of get swept up in various body issues in this book. And she has an eating disorder within it. It develops and it describes all of the things that she does. For one of the things that like I think about every single time I go into a public pool, it's just there. She says, if you swim early in the morning, it kickstarts your metabolism. And then I go for my swim before school and then I don't eat until lunch and then I have this tiny lunch. And so like I loved that book so much because it made me understand. I didn't have an eating disorder as a kid, really, apart from that one drop of jeans size face. But that was more of an experiment. But
I mean, that was a communal eating disorder.
Yeah,
it was community. That was being part of the community.
That was being part of the family. But I do have friends who are like, oh yeah, I internalized all of that as tips.
Yeah, but that's what you do. I mean, you know, even like there's a bit where, I mean, Clueless, I love that film, but there's a bit where they're at lunch and she, like, it's just again a throwaway comment, but it's so apt. Where like Cher goes to John, it's like, if you cut it up into little pieces, it likes less calories, something like that. And it's like, and I remember watching Skins and there's
Cassie.
That. Yeah, and she does this, she shows Ed how like it makes it look like she's eating without actually eating. So it's like moving around stuff on the plates. And it's interesting the things you stick with, right? And even, you know, going back to Super Size versus Super Skinny, you know, like I was like, what are they eating? Sometimes I'd be like, maybe if I could recreate that. And I suppose there has to be a sense of, you know, I mean, I do think that series is pretty problematic and you would not get away with it today. I mean, also like, you know, things like The Biggest Loser and stuff like that, you know, it's a whole culture around like Extreme Makeover and these things where bodies on display and it's like, you got to look this way, which obviously gave us it all.
Yeah. And all those shows where it would be like, this is what this person eats in a week. Gross kind of thing. And like laying it all in front of them is awful. But I am thinking a lot more what you said about we are, I think, women, we have all this language and context for discussing amongst each other the ways in which like millennial culture, like early millennial culture, like fucked us up and size zero and all this. And I feel like we're all unpicking the trauma together. But I do worry about the men because you're right. Like they are the kind of unrealistic body image thing has really come for them. It's always been there, but it's really come for them in the last 15 years. And when I think about the men in my life, pretty much all of them have a pretty big hang up that they will not don't really like to talk about, don't really like to get into, think it's weird that anyone else thinks it's weird kind of thing. And I worry that it's like because I'm a freelancer, as are you, I spend a lot of time in my neighborhood and just wandering around in the middle of the day, and I see a lot of PTs. PTs going to or from some kind of park boot camp situation, and they're always just like drinking a protein shake on like a wall and like slamming a muffin into their mouth because they're just like getting up the energy for the next thing. And I just think PTs eating alone should be its own sort of photo series. But like I keep thinking that I was like, we're just farming all this masculinity. We're farming all this hyper-masculinity and we have nothing to do with it. Like, we don't have any physical jobs. We have no manufacturing jobs left in any of the countries that we live in. There's, you know, obviously, you know, there's a war in Ukraine right now, but like in terms of men in the armed services, it's like dwindling. What is it all for? What are they?
You know, it's interesting because I've kind of on a personal level, like me trying to understand, why am I working out now? Like, what am I working out for?
Yeah.
And I think it, if we reframe like being fit and healthy as less about aesthetic, outer aesthetic, but like inner health, because sure. I feel like one of the reasons, of course, like I just, you know, you never know what's going to happen. You never know when you might need to run away.
Well, true, there's that. Yeah.
And I think it's like, I feel stronger in my body. I feel healthier. It's also all the cardiovascular, like, mm-hmm. exercise, aerobic exercise is really good for you. And especially when you get older and stuff.
We all get that exercise is good for you.
But I think, like, there's so much now. It's like, even trying to get people who don't, you know, especially when you get to, a, you know, some conversations I have with people where, now that their metabolism is like really slow, everywhere else, we all know, like, you know, have to do juice, SCP, no, but your metabolism slows down. Mm-hmm. But they haven't, you know, now they're kind of like really insecure about their bodies because it's like they didn't have to worry about stuff when they, or they didn't worry about these things when they were kind of a bit younger. Now there's this sense of, you know, they just want to be able to get up the stairs or, you know what I mean? Yeah. Not lose their breath. But with the men thing, I don't know. It's interesting. It's all like, it's all about, it all kind of comes down to capitalism and consumerism, right? It's like, look, you can buy the perfect body. And if you just invest in this, it's just new ways of us to spend our money, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I also think it kind of comes down to sort of like a lack of male community thing. Like,
yeah.
I think...
There was that thing...
Men lifting weights together is definitely like a weird little way they punt.
I think it's interesting because, you know, you mentioned about like men getting these girls. Like I had an ex-boyfriend who was like, I just need to lose like this couple of pounds, like this, like lose a stone. Yeah. And he'd go running and stuff like that. I mean, he drank a lot of beer. Like, you know, he was like 7 years older than me. But it was kind of like, I didn't mind. I was like, you don't have to... Yeah. Don't do it for me. If you want to do it for you, that's fine. But don't feel like you need to because I love you the way you are.
I wonder if you've seen this viral TikTok that goes around. You know those like horrible TikToks where it's like someone just runs up to somebody on the street to ask them an invasive question. And it's like my worst genre of thing. But nonetheless, I have seen them. But there's this thing of like this guy and he's like a big guy, like a hefty guy. And like I would say like, you know, rugby player build or whatever. And he goes up to this sort of very skinny, cool, festival-y, Coachella-looking girl and he's like, would you date me if I lost weight kind of thing? Or would you date me if I wasn't fat or something? And he puts the mic over to her and she goes, I would date you now. Like,
aww.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, oh, but like also it's like he kind of doesn't believe her and he won't believe her. And like even if you look in the comments, it's like, oh yeah, fucking right, bitch.
Yeah.
As if kind of thing. And it's like, yeah, like men just, they don't really believe us. Do you know what I mean? Because they're believing each other. And it's the same with women. We don't believe men when they say that they don't really mind
and
if
we, say this,
you know?
More men who are plus size can get women than the other way around.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? So it's kind of, it's a weird one, isn't it? I think, you know, going back to your, what, you know, thinking about like how can, where's the responsibility? Are we showing things, you know, go back to Girls Under Pressure, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, is she sharing too much detail? Maybe, you know, when we were growing up, that's easy to internalize because there wasn't an interrogation of that conversation.
Yeah.
We didn't really know, again, what eating disorders was. I don't remember really talking about it at school.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And again, the idea of being slim was normalized in our culture.
But even that book was a representation of you don't have to be a thin person to have an eating disorder. I think that's what's so powerful and great about that book.
Yeah, yeah. I think... But if you're reading that and you had no concept and it's great, you can take that and, you know, some people will read that and will take tips or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think what's really great about now is the way there's less shame about talking about it. Like, you know, the first time, you know, me writing about my eating disorder in my book was like really freeing. I wrote that whole chapter in a day. It just kind of fell out of me. I was like, just felt really good. And I never really spoke to anyone about it. Like kind of before, and then be able to share, and you realize how many people have got to go, yeah, same girl, like all these people that I knew in my life who had gone through their own thing. Now we can have an actual discussion about it and talk about it and say, okay, we can watch that, but also maybe we don't have to take it at face value. I think now we're able to have a dialogue and conversation and we're pushing back a bit against the kind of, you know, there is still a ridiculous standard that maintains. I think all of us, I think it's really hard to untangle that sort of like ingrained patriarchal kind of like controlling all the way we look. So, you know, we talk about in body hair as well. It's like, am I shaving my armpits because I want them shaved? Or do I still
I feel like that conversation has been planted in our heads to distract us from our rights being taken away.
Yeah.
It's like we're constantly why am I putting on lipstick? No more abortion.
Yeah. It's just like, again, it's forcing us to think about these things And it just feels like actually it would just be really good if we have just an outlet to talk about stuff when we're feeling a bit shit and feeling a bit down and why we use these as crutches. And also, again, with the eating disorders, when we treat it as a mental health condition rather as like a kind of, you know, diet obsession, you know, because also, you know, it can also be an addiction, right? Isn't it? When you eat food, like you're addicted to that feeling of I want to fill myself up or I want to have that, you know, it's a really tough conversation that I don't, you can't generalize. It's not a model life. Everyone has their own.
Yeah, there's a reason why there are entire podcasts dedicated to just this. And yeah. Like, I really recommend people listen to like Maintenance Phase and podcasts like that, because this is very much just us sort of glancing
off. It's so funny
of it,
when you say, you know? Maintenance Phase. I have another podcast, but I know exactly what that means.
Yeah.
It's like, I know
it's
what
really
that means.
It's really great. Exactly.
How to maintain. Yeah. Like, we're so used to it. Like diets and all these things, like you can't be a female identifying person and not really know what diets are. It's kind of, I don't know if we want the equality where, I mean, is it equality that men have to deal with this now?
I think there's often this thing, I find it very fascinating when like men begin to suffer from things that like historically have been female problems. There's like a weird instinct just to go like, well, see how you like it kind of thing. But actually it's like, no, that's terribly sad. Mm. The last thing I wanted to bring up, I wonder if you've seen it, was did you ever watch BoJack Horseman?
Yes.
So I think that show had patches of great and patches of fine. But one storyline I loved is that you have the Diane character who begins the series as like, she's very much like the messy millennial woman. She's like very much a Fleabag type character of like, she's a love interest. She's
also cool, right?
She's cool.
I don't care about things.
But you know, even though she's a cartoon, you know the kind of person that she's representing. But as it goes on, and I think what's good about that show is it peels back the layers on archetypes. It's like, it really sits with like, this is the thing that this person is presenting, but here are the sort of layers within it, and here's how much of that is a show and how much of it isn't. And with her, it's like she's somebody who's like suffering from a lot of different traumas and, you know, depression and all this kind of stuff. And towards the end of the series, she moves to Chicago with her sexy ox boyfriend and she goes on meds, and because of the meds she gains weight. And so for that half of the series we just see a bigger Diane, and it's this thing of like showing a character who has gained weight but who's better off. And we need more of that. So I think it's such a powerful storyline to show somebody who is bigger because they're happier, because they're looking after themselves, because so much of the conversation is framed towards someone's bigger, it means they're not looking after themselves. We're just worried for you, that kind of thing, which I think is so poisonous.
And you know, to bring that back around to Heathers, I think about Martha Dumptruck, the character.
Oh yeah.
And you know what's really interesting about her, I love the fact that she and Veronica become friends. I love the journey that Veronica goes on, in the sense of she's a dick, but she's also that kind of peer pressure into being that sort of way. And, you know, misanthrope of like Christine Slater, like Jakey comes in. But then in the end, she kind of like saves, she's like, no, actually, I'm not going to be like nihilistic about it, and let's save it. And then her and Martha Dumptruck like walk off as mates in the end. But I think what's, you know, Martha is a lovely person. She's not even the kind of stereotype of being like a jolly, you know, bubbly, that person, right? Because that's often like the case. That's how they get like people who are of that size get labeled with.
Yeah.
But she, you know, if she wasn't getting bullied about her weight by the Heathers, by school, she could just be living her life and being great, like, and just be happy with herself. She tries to commit suicide and fails. And thank God she does fail. And then she goes off, and then it's like, it feels like she's the one who didn't have to change herself. Right? She didn't have to go on a journey because she was always lovely. And I think that's actually, I love that characterization where someone's actually just like inherently just a good person. And it's like, you can go away from it. And of course, Veronica should want to be friends with her. And I like that she's like, Veronica should be more like Martha. Right? I like kind of like that. And as what you're saying about like, how do we present people who are, you know, happy in their body. I mean, look, Martha's not happy in her body because she's bullied, right? And because of the society.
Yes.
And that's 89 or whatever, when it came out, 88. So like, for me to see people who are different sizes or a bigger size, you know, and again, it's such, you know, again, who knows your body, how tall you are, factors into how big you look or whatever like that. It's like, I love it when you have a character where, yeah, it just be who they are, who they are.
When I think of that, a scene that always makes me cry is in School of Rock, where I think the character's name is Tamika.
The amazing singer at the end who comes to the soda.
But she you know, she comes up, she's sort of like, they have this moment where he assigns all everyone in the class random jobs, and and like, you know, Posh Spice, you know, yeah, you're on base or whatever. And it's like, he gets to these like three kids at the end who he hasn't given a job to, and they're kind of like, they're all quite, you know, big kids or whatever. And he goes, roadies. And that's it. And it's funny, but then she comes up at the end of class and she's like, you know, I can sing, I'm a singer. And she sings this incredible, and he's like, wow, this is amazing, why didn't you put your hand up? And she's like, well, because I'm fat, you know. And he doesn't say, no, you're not fat. He doesn't say, like, he doesn't feel sorry for her. And he's like, I'm fat, like, and everyone loves me because when I'm on stage, I'm sexy, I'm great, I'm amazing. And like, you know, you look at Aretha, she's a big woman, everyone wants to party with Aretha. And it's just like, I just wish there was more things like that, you know?
You know what? Keeping on the Jack Black flex, I mean, him in The Holiday being Kate Winslet. Have you seen the TikTok where he's like, doesn't know if it's like, you can believe that, like, Kate Winslet. We went to Kate Winslet, who starred with Leonardo DiCaprio, wants to be with Jackety McBlackety. And it's like him, because again, you know, he's not...
I love him so much!
I love him so much. You can find that clip. I saw it on TikTok and I'm obsessed with it. And, you know, when you think about The Holiday, like, again, Kate Winslet, you know, gorgeous Rose from Titanic, you know, all that type of thing. And then, like, he's not exactly what you would consider, like, the Hollywood guy, right? Mm-hmm. And so for him to be the love interest in that, I mean, again, it's so much easier for, like, guys to do it. But again, he's always been, Jack Black has always been, like, a bigger guy.
He's a gorgeous
guy. And I love that he's
a
romantic, romantic interest. Like, that's beautiful. Not just being, like, the chubby psychic. Although I will not forgive him for Shallow Hal.
No, yeah, I would rather leave that alone. But I think I'm really interested in, you know, the kind of Harry Styles is wearing a dress. Oh my God, what a trailblazer kind of thing. And Timothy Chalamet wearing a dress. Oh my God, what a trailblazer. Mm. And like, great, it's lovely, cool. But I'm like, it's not groundbreaking.
No.
If people who are already the beauty standard are doing it, in my eyes. It's like,
oh, yeah,
when Jack Black is wearing an evening gown and everyone's like, fucking hell, Jack Black, yes. Yeah.
And have you seen him on a Super Mario Brothers press tour? I mean, he's
so
been
funny.
Killing
he's
it.
So
in his,
lovely.
Like, in his Bowser outfits. I love it. But you're right, isn't it? And I think of people
like Sam Smith, for example, is somebody who's talked a lot about like their queerness and their weight and whatever. And like, people are still like, I don't know, kind of thing. But then again, Harry Styles in a dress, it's like standing ovation, you know.
But when you say Sam Smith and they're kind of, you know, they should be able to wear what they want. And again, we shouldn't be dissecting it in that sort of way. But we're just a bitchy society.
Okay, we're really running out of time. But Hannah, your book Strong Female Character is out now.
Yes, you can. It's out on. You can get an audiobook as well. If you like the way I sound on this podcast, you can hear me sounding a little bit sultrier because when I do my podcast audiobook voice, it's just a little bit nicer.
And you also have a podcast of your own?
Yes, so I have two podcasts. I have Fade to Black, which is a weekly review podcast, so we review the weekly films, when we talk about hot takes and sometimes interviews as well. And then I do like a capsule podcast called The First Film Club, which we also do an event series where we speak to people about the first films they've made. And you can listen to my interview with Michael Lehman, whose first film is insane to me. His first film's Heathers.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.